This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Matt Doyle producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And in the first segment, we have Jim Harper. He's a name that you'll hear frequently in the years to come, a rice, crawfish, sugarcane, and soybean farmer in Rapides Parish. He's the 12th president now of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Ronnie Anderson held that post since 1989. He was with us many times over the last many years. And, of course, this is the largest industry in our state. Farm Bureau is the biggest entity for the agriculture community with 143,000 members. And last report, there are 143,316 people in the United States who have died of COVID-19. That's a nationwide figure, and it's a big number. But 143,000 people in Louisiana is a big number, so this is a substantial organization. Avery Davidson is also in studio. Many remember him as an intrepid reporter, but he is communications director for the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. And one of the two voices you hear providing reports daily across the state for the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Network. And good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, Jim Harper, you're from the wonderful hamlet of Cheneyville, Louisiana.
Yes.
And you're, what, sixth-generation farming
yes,
family?
Yes, sir. We're a sixth-generation farm.
So it's farmers. In your genes. It's in your genes.
It's in my genes, yes, sir.
When did you know that you were going to follow the family tradition?
Well, since I was a kid, I used to follow my father around on the farm, and I worked on the farm, you know, coming up, and I went to LSU and got a degree in ag business, and I came back to the family farm in Cheneyville, and I've been farming ever since then.
Well, as my friend Don Molino says, if you've eaten today, thank a farmer. We take it for granted. We live in a country of plenty of resources, and the farming community is a big part of it, maybe the biggest part. Without that, nothing else happens. We've got to eat to live, and you are representing this group. This is High Cotton, as they say, 143,000 members, a group that was formed in 1922. How are the people in the agriculture industry being affected by COVID-19?
Well, this virus has had a tremendous effect on agriculture in Louisiana, particularly with the livestock industry and the cotton industry. Our beef producers, you know, they were ready to sell a lot of their calves when this virus mm-hmm. hit, and there was no one wanting to buy them. And then the packing plants had problems with the virus. And it probably cost our producers 20 to 25 cents a pound over a 2 or 3 month period. And it's something else going on with this virus in the poultry industry in North Louisiana. They've had problems at some of the processing plants, and that slowed the production of poultry down. So mm-hmm. they're not, our farmers are not getting the flocks they would have been getting. So their production is probably going to be cut 25%. And the cotton industry, you know, we export a lot of cotton, and a lot of those sales were canceled. And even in the corn industry, which about 40% of the crop is used for ethanol, because of the virus, driving has been reduced, so the need for ethanol has been cut. So it's had a big effect on Louisiana agriculture.
And Avery, you know, this is a huge industry. When mm-hmm. the agriculture industry suffers, as almost every industry in the state is, Louisiana feels some pain.
They feel the pinch, and most literally in the crawfish industry, because you have one industry there that lost almost all of its season. We're talking about having demand almost go away overnight at the peak part of the season, when folks normally would be getting together for big crawfish boils, and now they're being told no gatherings. And so Mr. Harper can tell you, as a crawfish producer, that really put a pinch in the industry.
Yeah. On our farm, our production was cutting in half. There was just no demand for the crawfish, and the price dropped on mm-hmm. average about 80 cents a pound.
Most people don't think of Cheneyville as a hotbed for crawfish, but you've been doing this a long time, haven't you?
Yes, sir. We're kind of, you know, we're kind of in the south central part of the state, and we raise rice, and we rotate the rice and crawfish.
John in New Roads writes, cattle are losing $200 a head. Pecans are selling at the lowest prices in history, and that's the good news. He says that warmer weather, whatever you want to call it, is creating pathogens to which we have no resistance. These are times in which we're being challenged. Are we up to the challenge?
Oh, I think we are. You know, like anything like this, it takes a little time to get through it, but I'm sure we're up to the challenge, and we will get through it.
And we've been talking about COVID-19 earnestly for 4 months and a few months prior to that. But the last 4 months, it's been a daily topic of discussion. And early on, I would look at these parishes, and the Advocate's done a nice job of giving the tally each day. And there were like no cases in West Carroll, no cases in Tensaw. Well, those are small parishes. But now, to give you an example, West Carroll Parish, 198 cases, Tensaw, 40 cases. It's everywhere. It's in rural areas. And this has to affect the farming community.
Yes, sir, it does. You know, on the farm, you know, a lot of farmers have labor, and, you know, everyone's concerned about their labor, and we're trying to, you know, follow the guidelines to reduce the amount of a virus on the farm.
Well, farmers have always worked harder than just about anybody else, and that remains the case. But, of course, now we have automation, which has made the job easier. But I suspect, like most people who grew up on a farm, your dad was like the proverbial Marlboro man, wasn't he? I bet he was a tough guy.
He was, and, you know, whatever success I've had, I give him a lot of credit for it.
What impact did he have on you?
Well, you know, I used to follow him around. You know, he let me work on the farm after I got in high school. He always paid me when I worked, just like a regular laborer. And I learned some economic lessons from him to be thrifty with your money and try to save a little along the way.
Well, a listener notes about the political might of the Farm Bureau Federation, and, for example, in 2015, all the major candidates gathered for their first big debate in New Orleans, and it didn't go well for the front runner at that time, David Vitter, and that may have been the beginning of the end of his campaign. Obviously, the Farm Bureau carries a lot of weight politically. No candidate for office, no matter which party he or she is affiliated with, can neglect the potency of the Farm Bureau. How involved politically are you in trying to get what you want for your constituents?
Well, we have a big presence at the Louisiana legislature, and what makes us successful is we speak with one voice in the legislature. You know, we go through these issues and through these bills, and we decide what we can and cannot support. And when we let our legislators know, they know the whole Farm Bureau is behind them.
Here's a question from Hal in Monroe, listening online at WRKF.org, asking about this virus jumping from humans to animals. It's thought by most that it probably started with an animal, but are there cases where animals are getting coronavirus that we know of?
You know, not that I'm familiar with, but I have read where animals can get the virus, but it's not transferable to humans.
Right. Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Harper and Avery Davidson. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a couple of quick questions, and that is regarding the legislation for banning the terms of riced cauliflower and riced broccoli. I know I've been looking on the rice aisle, and I can't seem to find any broccoli, and I can't seem to find any cauliflower in the rice aisle.
Yeah, you're not going to find those there because they're vegetables. They are not rice. And it was more to show that some terms have they have meaning. Okay, and example, milk means a secretion from a mammal. So calling something that you make from soy milk is not applicable. That word does not mean that. And the same thing with rice. Rice is not a verb. It is a noun. So therefore, you can't rice something. You can chop something up and make it look like rice, but it's still cauliflower.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we thank you for joining us today, and hopefully the first of many times we'll talk with Jim Harper. Avery Davidson, congratulations on the work you do.
Thank you.
It's the most important industry in our state, bar none, because without food on our table, we're not able to survive. Jim Harper, thanks for keeping the six-generation family tradition alive, and now you are large and in charge of the biggest farming organization in the great state of Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. Looking forward to working with you.
We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. We're joined now by Stan Harris. He's the president and CEO of the Louisiana Restaurant Association. We just had Jim Harper from the Farm Bureau Federation, and it all goes together. We're a state known for our food and our culture, and we're very dependent upon eating out and eating in, and nobody serves food better than we. But right now, in this COVID age, restaurants are really hurting. And Stan made news in a big way on the governor's show last Wednesday when he said on Ask the Governor that 25% of the restaurants in Louisiana may fail this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. And 40% of those in New Orleans are in peril. Stan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. You know, one of the things that we're fond of saying in Louisiana as well, it's not just how we prepare food, but it's what we have to prepare that makes us different. And obviously our friends from the Farm Bureau Federation, our farmers, our seafood producers, our fishermen, all of that's important to having this entire universe of great food.
Well, in New Orleans last week, for example, K. Paul's announced its closure. Talk about an institution that was one of the most famous restaurants in the world at one time and had been in operation even after the founder died, Paul Prudhomme. But is that just a harbinger of things to come?
You know, you have to look at all of the different drivers as to why businesses close. That business had a 41-year existence. It was really one of the harbingers of regional cuisine in the United States. And really launched something in New Orleans that we had not seen before. We had a lot of old-line Creole restaurants, but nothing that was doing this type of innovative new Louisiana cuisine. But, yeah, we expect that we'll see some more closings like that. In this particular case, Chef Paul's niece and her husband had been running the restaurant for a period of time, and they had tried to reopen, and it just they couldn't get enough staff, and there's just not a lot of demand, so it made sense for them to look at another avenue to spend the rest of their life. And that happens sometimes. People have been in it two or three generations, and it may just hit at that particular time that now's the time if we've got real estate to sell or other assets and look for something else to do or simply to retire.
Stan Harris is with us, chair of the Louisiana Restaurant Association. Stan is a graduate of LSU here in Baton Rouge, and you spent many, many years in the trenches working for, I believe, Ruth's Chris's for many years. Can you tell us about your background, Stan?
Yeah, I spent almost 30 years of my life in business with T.J. Moran. We were the largest Ruth's Chris Steakhouse franchisee, and I opened restaurants across the country for our company, and then we were fortunate enough to be able to sell the Ruth's Chris assets of that company and sold the rest of the assets back to family members of the Moran family. And I moved on to do some other things and then ended up here at the LRA in 2010. But I've enjoyed it. It was one thing I understand is how hard it is to make a dollar in the restaurant business. And I understand how hard the work is, but I also understand the people in it and the people that do this. So many people look at it and say, well, gracious, if you do this, wow, you must be crazy. But, you know, TJ used to have a saying all the time that if you do it successfully for a long period of time, you become a legend. So perhaps we were legendary in some of the things that we did, but it never changed. It was always hard work. But you know, people ask me what I miss from the days of doing that. I miss a lot of our team members and our staff. I miss a lot of our guests. But it was definitely hard work, and I love supporting the industry now because I feel like I can help people to become more profitable and understand the things that they can do from a scale standpoint to help them make more money.
How are the workers faring right now?
I think the workers are probably in the toughest spot here. And you know, it's one of those times where when things are good, the workers and ownership works closely together. And when things are bad, everybody's kind of in the same boat. These are cash flow businesses. So when there's no cash flow or no demand, it's hard to schedule people. It's hard to get people to come back from work. I think as we shared on Ask the Governor last week, we're looking to Congress to extend the federal unemployment benefits. I don't know what that's going to look like. We've heard all over the board, but we've got a lot of people in our industry that are not going to have a job come August the 1st right now. And to walk away from that and act like it's not a mm-hmm. thing is insensitive, and it's something that we're not going to work toward. We're going to work really hard toward trying to help get an entire package of bills passed that also includes the extension of some unemployment compensation in addition to what the state is going through.
The voice that we are hearing is Stan Harris, who heads the Louisiana Restaurant Association. Many of us remember him when he was at Ruth's Chris's, and he and Tom Moran were forces of nature and caught this town by storm and did so well for so many years. And these are times like no other for the industry. And if you'd like to chime in, we still have some time with Stan. 877-217-5757 is your number. And, of course, the workers are affected. Another listener notes that even the restaurants that have reopened and are doing reasonably well, you have fewer patrons. And the servers who rely on tips, obviously, they have less income. So how is that affecting those who presumably are doing better than others? Even they are not doing as well as they once did.
No, and you know, our National Restaurant Association, I serve on the board of that organization, and we're projecting about a $240 billion impact to restaurant revenue for 2020. When we look at Louisiana, our revenue projections for this year were about $11 billion. That generates over $1 billion in state and local sales taxes. We feel like that's going to be off 25% to 30%. So, you know, if you reduce it back to a $7 or $8 million level, that's going to reduce those taxes that local communities and the state depend on to sustain their operations. So it's not going to be an easy fix. It's going to take building guest confidence, but at the same time, we're going to have to do some things that generate demand. Our hotels around the state in some areas are doing okay or a little better than others, but nobody's running in the high 70s or 80s, which is where they need to be able to make money. And let's face it, restaurants that depend on visitors, depend on people that are coming to do business meetings, corporate meetings, association meetings, statewide meetings, those aren't happening right now. And because of that, we're losing out on a lot of opportunity. But again, those are just part of our normal environment. When they're not happening, that revenue's not there either.
877-217-5757 for Stan Harris, president of the Louisiana Restaurant Association. Donna in Mid-City, you're on with Stan. Good morning.
Hi, I just have a quick question. I miss Nympha's. What happened to that restaurant? Thank you.
Well, I miss Nympha's too, but Nympha's, the owner, the TJ's son that bought that, chose to de-brand that and try to create their own brand as Tio Javi's. He has since sold that restaurant to the owner and operator of Ruth's Chris, who replaced us there, and he has rebranded it as Tio Javi's and is doing a good job. He's rebuilt his business model and rebuilt his menu and how they execute. I still visit there frequently when I'm in Baton Rouge.
877-217-5757 for Stan Harris. David in Atlanta. Hi, David.
Good morning. What a shame. Canada, Europe, New Zealand, South Korea, they have virtually no coronavirus cases. But the United States, we have a president who's too lazy and stupid to read his daily intelligence reports. And for that reason, the restaurants and many businesses are being put out of business and lives lost. What a disgrace.
All right. Well, the situation is getting worse rather than better right now, Stan. And I'm sure that gives you pause that politics aside, we've got a serious problem here that could intensify. So are you bracing for even harsher times?
Yeah, I think anyone who is in our industry, Jim, has to look at this and try to figure out that long range may be day-to-day right now. It's very hard to sit and plan. If you're we're in a growth cycle prior to this, how do you look at executing that plan and building more capacity right now when there's no demand? At the same time, you know, we're looking at the folks that own and operate these restaurants. Many of them have their entire net worth tied up in leasehold improvements that they don't own the building, and they're rightfully fearful. The staffs that support these restaurants and make them possible, they're in the same boat, and we're looking at trying to figure out. We have launched a blueprint for restaurant revival last week.
All right, we'll pick up there and find out about the blueprint for restaurant revival from Stan Harris. 877-217-5757, back after the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, your number, 877-217-5757. A bit more time with Stan Harris, who is president of the Louisiana Restaurant Association. Earlier we heard from Jim Harper, head of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Stan is a person known well in Baton Rouge for his years at Ruth's Chris. And as we were going to the break, Stan, you were talking about this blueprint for restaurant revival, and it is an $11 billion industry when times are normal. What does the blueprint detail?
Well, what we're trying to do is create a restaurant recovery fund under what's called the Restaurants Act. It's about $120 billion in support for the industry that Senator Wicker from Mississippi and Senator Sinema from Arizona have brought into the U.S. Senate. And it really builds on the success of the PPP and considers possibly a second round of application to be able to help them sustain this. Because it's clear to us when we went into it, everyone thought we were going to be shut down for a short period of time and that we were going to get through this and return to normal. It's clear we're not returning to normal anytime soon. And while there are varied opinions on what we can do to mitigate that, we know clearly that we've got to be able to create some legislative instruments to be able to help businesses maintain themselves until they get back to whatever the marketplace looks like. It's definitely a challenge. It's not something that we are taking on rather lightly. We're at a very serious juncture for our industry right now. And, you know, it's clear for associations when people are under stress to look at it and say those things. But it's very clear when you walk in a restaurant today, the demand is not there. A lot of businesses can't do a lot of takeout and delivery. Their model just doesn't work for it. They don't have a drive-through. So trying to get them to a point where we can help them sustain themselves is job one right now.
John in Lafayette. John, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Stan Harris. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I was just calling in. I'm from Lafayette, Louisiana, and we've got a great deal of restaurants here and some really good ones that started up in the last 6 months. And, yeah, I really feel for these guys. They're doing a great job pre-pandemic.
So what's your question? What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, you know, it's kind of hard to see these people trying to get restaurants going whenever they seem like hotbeds in a way. So it's just kind of are there better guidelines unless you can do takeout or have outdoor seating? It just kind of makes for an awkward situation.
Stan?
Well, you know, the guidelines that we released that we have shared statewide, these reopening guidelines were put together with consultation from the FDA and the CDC. And I think we're on our third or fourth update to those. We talk with the Department of Health, Office of Public Health regularly. We talk to the Office of State Fire Marshal. And those are the folks that are overseeing this right now. You know, part of this is there's not a whole lot of demand. And at the same time, people are saying, well, how do we ensure that they're safe? Well, that gets back to the argument of, do you think masks make a difference? We do. We're encouraging people to wear masks, not only for themselves, but for the folks that are trying to provide service to them. Focus on good hygiene, washing your hands, using hand sanitizer when that's not available, and really focusing on social distancing. You know, our office is operating in Metairie, but we've got effective social distancing in what we do here in the office because it's something that people need to focus on. I'm willing to take any step that can let a business operate and at the same time provide some safety for its visitors and its team members.
A listener notes the success of Ruth's Chris's, and my guess right now is that the bravest soul in the world would be opening a restaurant right now. That's been put on hold probably everywhere in the country. But do you sense that this is just a bump in the road, that a couple of years from now we'll look back on this and view it as a growing experience, or is this something that's going to dramatically affect us for the rest of our lives?
I think that this is going to be a learning experience for all of us. I think it's going to bring public health and business closer together and understanding how to deal with outbreaks of this type and others that arise. And I think we're going to build more effective communication and effective mitigation. We still have people, believe it or not, Jim, that are opening restaurants right now. BRG Hospitality just opened a restaurant in New Orleans this weekend. Again, there are still people that are bullish on believing what they're doing. They love the industry, and they feel like they're going to be able to sustain themselves to get through this until demand recovers, until we have either a vaccine or a therapeutic treatment that's 100% successful, and move this into our rearview mirror, hopefully, sometime very soon.
How is it right now in the French Quarter, if you wanted to dine at one of those world-famous restaurants? How would that experience be right now? If at all.
A lot of our restaurants are limited in their service right now. Galatoire's is one of the few that is operating down there. That's one of the old line restaurants. Many of the other older line restaurants that have been here for many, many decades, some over 100 years, are not operating right now or operating on a very limited basis. And again, those businesses, 30 to 40% of their business is based on group business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's people that come for an association meeting, a trade show, a corporate meeting. And when that's not there, it doesn't make sense to try to do 50% volume of the remaining 60. So they're down to their maximum they could probably do is 25 to 30% sales volume. And that's just not enough to induce somebody to want to operate their business.
Pam and Baker. Pam, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Stan Harris. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I am very pleased to hear that the Restaurant Association is encouraging your members to go ahead and practice those guidelines that we hear from the CDC. How has the response been from the members about the social distancing, about mask wearing, hand washing, things of that sort? I'm just curious. I had a really good experience when I went to a restaurant on Father's Day. I was very apprehensive, but, you know, they were pretty insistent on, you know, making sure that no one was sitting next to each other. Seating areas were, you know, marked off. All the staff wore masks.
All right. Precautions are being taken, I presume, everywhere, but how can people feel comfortable?
Well, I think it's good to hear that you had a great experience, first off. And secondly, part of the obligation that you have as an operator when you open under the Open Safely guidelines here in Louisiana require you to commit to following these particular guidelines on social distancing, guests that might be waiting for a table, congregating groups that are in between service, not serving over the bar on demand, and being able to use bars as additional seating. And look, we would love to be able to stand up every restaurant to be able to have outside seating in the rest, but most restaurants don't have the capacity to do it, especially those in a more urban area. We've had great results from some of our mayors and administrators in wanting to allow them to go outside, temporarily use the sidewalks and things. But, you know, it's not cool here in Louisiana during the summertime. And if you don't have the ability to build a system that helps manage the temperature, the demand for outside seating is going to be somewhat minimal right now.
Well, Stan Harris, if you're game, why don't we touch base in about a month and see how we're doing? Hopefully things will be better, but thanks for your vigilance. And obviously this is an extremely important industry, not only to the economy of the state, but just to the well-being of the populace. We need our restaurants to succeed in Louisiana to feel comfortable as a people. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you inviting us.
Take care. We're joined now by Karen Kerrigan. She is the CEO and president of the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council. And a few weeks ago, we heard from Beth Mizell, the Franklinton representative, regarding what's going on in the legislature with broadband. And there was a measure that stayed the course and was accepted. The governor vetoed one measure, but we do have the attempt now to do what was attempted during the Jindal years when the governor of Louisiana at that time refused $80 million in federal funds for broadband. But Karen Kerrigan, where do we stand in Louisiana right now?
Well, I tell you, in D.C., there is a growing consensus, you know, in Congress, a bipartisan basis, to close the digital divide, you know, once and for all, you know, given, you know, what's happened with COVID-19, and this digital divide really became clear, right, in terms of, you know, with everything moving online, whether you're a small business that had to pivot to, you know, cloud services and technology to collaborate, to sell stuff, to make payroll, as well as individuals and homes, students, right, that moved to online learning. So, you know, with Louisiana, you know, having pockets, big pockets of rural areas that are underserved or not served with broadband, you know, certainly what's happening in Congress right now, whether it's infrastructure funding that they're looking at for phase four, the Rural Development Opportunity Fund that's happening at the FCC, there's movement right now. And, you know, it's this is where the reps, the U.S. reps, Mr. Scalise and others, and the senators, Kennedy and Cassidy, can lead in this regard. So, you know, we're hopeful something will happen, and we just need to keep pushing it to make sure that this is a priority so that everyone has access to broadband mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
What would you like for Steve Scalise to do?
Well, you know, Mr. Scalise, he's been, you know, pretty terrific in terms of leading on this issue. You know, a couple of years ago, he introduced legislation called the RAPID Act that encouraged the FCC to modernize its rules and regulations so that they could better roll out 5G and broadband. And a lot of red tape gets in the way, unfortunately. And a lot of that, of what they recommended in that bill, was adopted by the FCC. I would just say for Mr. Scalise and the senators, is just to continue to speak up on this and represent Louisiana, you know, weigh in and lean in on this issue. In terms of keeping it a priority.
We're going to spend some more time with Karen Kerrigan after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. A few more minutes with Karen Kerrigan on Talk Louisiana, president and CEO of the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council, and she is a proponent for broadband expansion in our country. And Louisiana being a rural state, we obviously have some issues that need to be addressed. And as mentioned, the previous governor turned down $80 million in broadband funding. That's been close to 10 years now. But Karen Kerrigan, Louisiana is a state with some rural firepower, as we know, and that could be enhanced if this were to be successful. So what has to be done to get us where we need to be in some of these areas that are so sorely lacking and joining the modern age?
Well, that's a real good question. I think, you know, as we move to the next wave of technology, which is 5G, which is much faster. And actually, if we're going to get broadband to the masses, funding 5G is more efficient, you know, for the taxpayer. You know, is to focus on these type of smart infrastructure projects like 5G. And so it's, I think, looking at sort of what the best technology is that we can bring to rural America and to underserved areas, certainly 5G is it, because it'll be transformative for states like Louisiana, giving them the opportunity to, you know, compete for investment and economic development dollars. And that is so important to the competitiveness of a state in order to have, I mean, broadband is essential, right? I mean, you can't do much without broadband. So, you know, getting, again, bringing 5G, you know, to everyone, and that's happening, obviously, in denser population areas right now. But those tax dollars that are going to be available, again, the 5G push, I think, is extraordinarily important and transformative, like I said, to a state like Louisiana, to, you know, its farming community, to its small towns. They really be able to compete internationally, you know, with that type of technology.
Well, thank you for joining us. Karen Kerrigan is on the front lines of this as President and CEO of the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council. It's been a pleasure, Karen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
See you soon. And we're joined now by Bruce Feiler. He is the author of six consecutive New York Times bestsellers, including The Secrets of Happy Families, The Council of Dads, which is now a hit series on NBC, and Walking the Bible. He's been on PBS many times, and his two TED Talks have been viewed more than 2 million times. He's back in a big way. His latest work is Life is in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age. And good morning to you, Bruce.
Good morning. It's so nice to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, when you started this book, you probably had no idea we'd be in the midst of a pandemic, but talk about change. Even if we didn't plan on change, it's here. So how are we able to adjust with so many uncertainties in our lives right now?
Well, we are in this period that I call a life quake, right, which is a massive change that has aftershocks for years. And I got started in this because I went through a life quake. I got cancer. I almost went bankrupt. My dad in Savannah, Georgia, tried to take his own life. And there wasn't really a book that could help me, and so I went on this journey talking to hundreds of people in all 50 states who went through these big changes. And then I spent a year combing through these, trying to identify kind of tools and takeaways that could help us in periods of change. And then, lo and behold, this book emerges at a moment when the entire planet is going through a life quake at the same time.
When things happen to us, as they invariably do, and inevitably do, we usually take them one at a time, but it's especially difficult when it happens, as you faced, with several crises at the same time. Does that make it much, much more difficult to adjust?
Well, it's interesting because some of these life quakes are involuntary, as you say, like there's a diagnosis or we lose a job or there's a drought. I heard you mentioning, the farming areas, there's a drought. That's an involuntary life quake. But a lot of them we choose. We choose to start something new or move to a new place or get into or get out of a relationship to confront a drinking problem, say. And it turns out that the life quake can be voluntary or involuntary, but the life transition that comes out of it must be voluntary. Like, you have to choose to take the steps and to go through the processes that I kind of outlined for you, and life is in the transition with, like, simple things you can do to make it go better. So you have to choose to go through the life transition, whether you've chosen the life quake or not.
You were born in Savannah, grew up there, now live in Brooklyn. That's certainly showing some ability to adapt. And right now, as we know, the center of the universe, the New York City area, has been hit immensely hard by the pandemic. How has that affected you and what you do in your everyday life with your wife and your daughters?
Yeah, well, my daughters went to online school back in the spring. And I feel like, you know, I felt like when this life quake hit that this experience of talking to people, two-time cancer survivor who climbed Mount Everest, military veterans who lost limbs, who learned to walk again, a high school dropout who earned a PhD and now helps non-traditional students, I felt like it gave me the tools to get through this period. So I felt this experience for me was like a tool-making factory. So when I did get walloped, I'm like, okay, I'll give you an example. Like, I forced my teenagers, they didn't love it, but I forced them, you know what, we're going to write out our feelings when this thing first hit, because learning to write down your feelings can be helpful. Like, we're going to pick something about our lives that we're going to shed, and then we're going to start a creative venture. My daughter's actually now baking a cake. How did people get through the pandemic? What was the thing we all saw in our lives? People started to bake again. So there is this process. Like, part of it is painful to say goodbye to the old you, but a lot of it actually is a creative process of building the new you that's going to come out of it even stronger.
The book is Life in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age from Bruce Feiler. It's at six straight New York Times bestsellers. And you say, and I think it's evident by what you're imparting right now, that even the most painful transition can improve our lives if we hang in there. How do we hang in there?
Well, if you look at the old scripture stories, there are periods in the wilderness in every religion. If you look at the great myths, Hercules, Odysseus, you know, everybody goes through a dark period. If I could leave you with one message, it would be this, and that is that transitions work. Like, life sometimes gets us stuck. Life transitions are how we get unstuck. So whatever it is that you're struggling with now, I was there. And I met people who were there and far worse. And if you come on this journey with me, you're going to find people. They're going to give you hope, but even more important, they're going to give you practical things you can do so that whatever you're struggling with now, whatever life transition you're in, will go a lot more quickly and a lot more effectively. Like, we can get through this together.
You say there are three main phases of transition. What are they?
Yeah, when you get into transition, you either feel chaotic and out of control or you feel stuck in place. And it turns out, look at enough of them, there are certain patterns. So like the three phases are, there's the long goodbye, where you say goodbye to the old you. There's a messy middle where you have to kind of shed certain habits and try new ones. And then there's this new beginning where you unveil your new self. And it turns out that we're all good at one phase. And one thing I do in the book is I kind of walk you through the process of figuring out what phase you're best at and what you're not, so that you can start with what you're good at. And then after that, then we'll go to the part that'll be difficult for you. But we're going to show you practical things you can do in that stage too.
And what are the emotions that can derail us when we're in transition?
I asked everybody, what's the top three emotions? That's such a good question, that they struggled with. Number one answer, fear. Number two answer was sadness, like they liked the old you. And then the third, which surprised me a little, was shame, like you're ashamed you're going through this, or that you've lost your job, or that your child has an addiction. And you know, people write down their feelings. You know, some people just buckle down, but 80% of the people said they use rituals of some kind to say goodbye to the world. It's sort of a way of saying to themselves and to the world around you, I'm going through a difficult period, but I'm going to say goodbye to this old world, and I'm going to be prepared to start building the new me that's going to come out of it.
The book is Life in the Transitions, Mastering Change at Any Age from Bruce Feiler. Bruce, congratulations on another fine work and your continuing success, and we look forward to another visit sometime soon.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be with you, and we'll get through this, everybody.
Thank you, my friend. And over the weekend, after we parted company Friday night, the news was known that Representative John Lewis, the legendary congressman from Atlanta, son of sharecroppers, apostle of nonviolence, bloodied at Selma and across the Jim Crow South, arrested 45 times in a struggle for racial equality, who carried a mantle of moral authority into the U.S. House of Representatives. He passed away after a six-month battle with pancreatic cancer. He was 80 years old. His death confirmed in a statement by Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. The New York Times puts it this way. Mr. Lewis, a Georgia Democrat, announced on December 29th he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He vowed to fight it with the same passion with which he had battled racial injustice. I've been in some kind of a fight for freedom, equality, basic human rights for nearly my entire life. On the front lines of the bloody campaign to end Jim Crow laws, with blows to his body and a fractured skull to prove it, John Lewis was a valiant stalwart of the civil rights movement, the last surviving speaker from the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, August 28, 1963. And more than a half century later, after the killing in May of George Floyd, a black man in police custody in Minneapolis, Lewis welcomed the resulting global demonstrations against killings of black people, and more broadly against systemic racism in many corners of our society. He was a man who helped make America great. John Lewis. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.